What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with our Experts Corner interviews, where we get the opportunity to have a conversation with short-term rental investors in the real world that are actually doing this, rolling up their sleeves and getting after it, willing to share the good, the bad, the ugly of short-term rental investing. And today we've got Mr. Matt Oakes joining us. So Matt, appreciate you joining me today.
I'm honored to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. It's always fun when we get these are my favorite episodes. Every week we get to chat with somebody that is in the game, and I get a chance to kind of catch up on your journey, on where you're at, some of the things that maybe I don't even know yet. And so we get to have that conversation, but let other people listen in. And so before we dive into the details of the short-term rental, I always like to start with kind of an introduction. Introduce yourself, where you guys are from, what got you interested in short-term rental investing, kind of what pays the bills. Just give us a little bit of a backstory, and then we'll dive in from there.
Sure, absolutely. So we live in Southeast Ohio. So we've been in this area for about the last 20 years. My background growing up, I was involved heavily in church and family and sports. My dad was and still is a preacher today. So that was a lot of my background there, but soccer took me into college to a local small Christian school in Parkersburg, West Virginia. That's where I met my wife there. So I wasn't about to leave after that, so stuck around for her. Graduated there. My wife started into children's social services work. I went on to insurance sales, and then transitioned from there into personal banker at Chase Bank, and moved on to cell phone sales with Verizon. Eventually landed as my career as a landman. I don't know if you've seen the TV show.
One of my favorite shows.
it's not quite that dramatic in real life, but
you're not dealing with the cartel on a regular basis.
I will share one of the funnier stories. There are situations where you go up to people's door and knock somebody's door that you have no idea who they are. Probably one of the politest ways I've ever been threatened was an older lady that I greeted at the door. She opened it about halfway, and we talked for about 5 minutes, and she finally decides to let me know, just so you know, there's a shotgun behind this door. I was like, appreciate you letting me know that. So not quite the same dramatics as the show, but there are always interesting situations dealing with landowners like that. But
I can imagine. I've been in the development game where you're knocking on doors of farmers, and they're not always wanting to talk about selling the property, right? Or in your case, leasing out that land, right?
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. That's some awesome. Are on board, and some are not. So yeah.
Right. So where were you doing that? That's a Texas thing. You guys are in Ohio. Like, where were you? Is there a spot for that there as well?
Yeah. So oil and gas Marcellus boom started in Pennsylvania, northern Pennsylvania.
Okay.
I did a lot of that. A lot of pipeline right of way work. So some of the leasing end of it, but a lot of easements, acquisition for pipeline easements. And that's kind of transitioned. There's a lot of that going on in Ohio now. And a lot of pipelines are actually being developed for data centers that are popping up all over the place. So, primarily I've worked through Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Ohio for all of that. So,
is that currently what you're doing is a landman? Nice.
Yep. That's currently what I do. So yeah.
That's always fun. Now that the show's out, you're like, before you're explaining what you did, and now the show comes out, it's like, hey, you say landman, and everybody's like, oh, really?
Yeah. That's right.
That's exciting.
It is. It's actually hilarious. I had a buddy I go to church with. He's like, landman. He's like, that's the show, right? And he's like, is that what you do? I said, oh yeah, it's absolutely what I do. I said, play it off. Not as dramatic, of course, but.
Right. No, let him think let that imagination run, right?
that's the other ongoing joke with the mustache. People think I'm in the CIA or something. So,
right.
I keep it all under wraps.
I love it. That's awesome. That's great. So that's where it's currently paying the bills. What got you interested in investing in real estate? Because I know you guys had some long-term rentals before short-term. So what got you ultimately interested in real estate originally?
Yeah, so we initially had a real estate investment based on kind of out of transitioning from the house we initially bought when we got married. Rather than selling that house, we decided to keep it and hang on to it as a rental property. We kept that for about 8 years, and it had its highs and lows. We had some of the not so good renters that destroyed things and had to gut things. But overall, it was a good process, and we came out ahead in the end. So that kind of set the stage for, okay, this is, you know, obviously something we can make work. And we, over the next 5 years after we've had that, we've kind of transitioned into a few different real estate things. Still currently own a mobile home park. We've got 32 lots. We own about 26 of those trailers. So it's a lot of maintenance work. Yeah. Eventually the play will be to try to transition out of that more into short-term rental, but it did bring about the benefits of a cost segregation study out of that. So I learned about the benefits of what that can do for my finances. So that kind of led to the short-term rental game, trying to see how we could play that more to our advantage. We're coming up on 4 years now with the mobile home park. Also in the last 3 years, we got into a storage unit facility. So we've got about a 90-door storage unit facility. So diversified a little bit in the real estate game, but definitely trying to transition more and more into short-term rental because we just see the benefits of being able to use it for our own personal use and not just the investment side. So,
yeah, love it. And it's always like real estate always has those four major kind of return levers, which is, when you buy a property, you've got appreciation, you've got note pay down. Somebody else is paying for the property for you through the rentals of what you're doing, right? You got the tax advantages. And then you've got that, note pay down, appreciation, tax advantages. And where's my fourth one?
Cash
flow. There we go. The number one thing that everybody chases. There we go.
That's right. Man, I appreciate
you. You're, no problem. Bailing me out there. Cash flow, note pay down, appreciation, and the tax advantages. The fifth one that we always talk about with short-term rentals is that personal use. And it's not always easy it's not always easy to put a dollar amount on that, right? It's not easy to figure out what that ROI is because it's more of a lifestyle ROI. But when we start doing it, we realize it's kind of a fun ROI. And many times we underestimate how much that means to us to have some properties that we can actually use along the way, because real estate is kind of a slow, stable asset. It's not like you become uber rich right out of the gate and overnight, right? It's one of those assets that it's kind of slow and steady, and it's not as volatile as some of the people that are playing the crypto game and all that stuff. But you're while you own these properties and while they're producing, it's kind of nice to be able to use them a little bit, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So that led you to being interested in short-term rentals. And so walk us through, you said you're Southeast Ohio. You guys ended up in a market that is a drive-to destination for you. But what were you looking at other areas? Did you already have this area pegged? And talk to me about the kind of choosing your location.
Yeah. We'd love beach vacations as a family. So that was definitely one of the options we were looking at. We traveled down to Gulf Coast area, and we looked at a few different places. That's still on the radar. We definitely want to get to that at some point. But we kind of stepped back and said, for our first go around, we wanted it to be someplace that we could easily get to. Because we did choose to self-manage. So we wanted it to be someplace within reach in a quick format. So if something goes wrong, we know we can get there. So, and we know, Hocking Hills is a hot market. So it fit the bill, for what we were looking at to try to get started. Definitely aligned with, our budget for what we wanted to get started into as well. So that's kind of why we chose that, but we're definitely we eventually want to get into a beach market too.
Yeah. So, looking at both options, you chose to stay kind of close to home. How far is it from home? How far is Hocking Hills from you guys?
Yep. So it's right about an hour to hour and 15 minutes from, nice. From our home. So
very doable, very easy to get to. And so yep. that had kind of factored in the personal use. It makes it a lot easier to use it when it's not being, you know, used and all those things. How long were you in the acquisition phase? How long were you looking at properties? Did you have to say no to a lot of stuff, or did you luck out right out of the gate? Like, walk me through that process.
Yeah. So we did kind of luck out right out of the gate with this one. We were looking at multiple properties, never really put any offers on anything. Mm-hmm. This was the first one we put an offer in on. We did think we lost it at the beginning. Somebody had put in an offer right before us. And they went ahead and let us make an offer on it. We kind of up the ante a little bit. The other person actually matched our offer. So since they went first, they let them go ahead and take it initially. Once they got into some of their financing, they ran into some issues with their the bank that they were using. The seller didn't feel comfortable with it. And we didn't actually end up going with them, but Jeff Chisholm's group, they had reached out to the seller and their financer and had a conversation with them and the real estate agent. And actually they were extremely helpful in us getting the deal back. So we were not able to put things together with them either, with trying to get a 10%, you know, second home loan, unfortunately, but they were crucial in us being able to get the deal back in our court. So,
yeah, it's a massive, it can be a massive advantage, especially when you're competing and especially when there's other people involved, other buyers involved that we're competing against, to have that lender being able to back up that, hey, listen, these are good borrowers. We've looked at their information. Everything's going to be, you know, the buyer or the seller wants to be confident that the buyer can close. Right. And the lender is a key part of that, if they can step in and have some of those conversations. So that's really good leverage to have the right partners, but also the right partners that really are looking at it saying, yeah, these guys should be good to go.
Yeah, no, we were extremely thankful for that. They were.
Did you officially go into a backup offer on that, or was it just that they, you know, you knew that you were competing, you knew they went with the first one, and did you say, like, I'm curious how you stayed in the mix there until you heard that you know, came into the front of the spot?
Yeah, we did put in as a backup offer there. So as soon as they ran into trouble with that, they came back to us. So. Love
it.
Yeah, we did.
I always tell people that, and it's a good, I'm glad that was the case there. And you brought that up, because a lot of times when we lose out on an offer, especially on a property that's going to work, we always try to go into a backup position and just say, hey, listen, we're interested. We love it. If we can make this work, or if something happens to fall through, let us know, please. And we'd be really interested. That sellers really like that. But it also, if you don't do that, a lot of times you don't get a call back. We assume that they're going to call us back anyways, because we made the offer. It almost never happens. The listing agent usually just puts it right back on the market and hopes that somebody comes back. And sometimes we see it, sometimes we don't. But if we go in a backup position, in an official backup position, we eliminate the risk of somebody else coming in over the top of us again. But also, that seller is more strict and willing to really look at the financing of the primary offer and all the things that the primary offer is asking, maybe on inspections or things that they want to fix. And they'll say, hey, listen, I've already got a backup offer here that's really qualified. And so, you know, if I know as a seller that I've got an option to go to the secondary offer, many times they look for, you know, they'll be very strict with that first offer. And so we always go in a backup position. It's crazy how often the backup position gets called up on offers. We don't think it would happen that often. It happens a lot. And I always tell people, especially in environments where you're competing. Now, we don't compete as much anymore as we used to, but it was really, really important piece of information to have when you are competing in an environment there's a lot of competition, and in your case, even with just one other person, going in a backup position puts you right in the line to be called up. So was this a new build? Was this a value add type property? Walk me through the type of property we're looking at.
Yeah. So it was an older home. An Amish gentleman was the one that had purchased it. He rehabbed everything, so it was all brand new siding, roof, yeah. Interior was all redone. So it was essentially like a new build. But he redid an old house and brought it back to life. And so we did not have a lot of work to do as far as, you know, the structure of the home. It was pretty well ready to go. So we just had to come in, do the design side of it and make it look good. So
love it. I love when I have somebody that I'm buying from that's an Amish community, when they do any sort of remodel or rehab on stuff, you know it's done really well and
that's right.
And good quality, right?
Yep, so absolutely.
Especially all the woodwork and, like you said, the siding and the woodwork and the roofing and all that stuff is always going to be really good.
Yep.
So yeah, the design. So walk me through that phase, right? I'm always curious on that setup and design phase and some of the decisions we make and, you know, what we were trying to do there as far as, you know, getting the property ready to be set up to put this thing on the market. How long did it take, and kind of walk me through that process?
Yeah. So I want to say we closed on the property it was late June. We ended up getting it put on the market ready to go late November. So we had a few hiccups along the way in the design setup. One of the big issues we ran across was it did have a well on the property. Mm-hmm. So it was not city water. One of the issues we had was, you know, the sulfur smell in the water. Yeah. So we finally came up with some ways to fix that. We got a filtration system put in. Then that kind of waterfalled into another issue of not being able to put out enough water to keep up with the filtration's purging. so then that led to needing to put in a bigger storage tank, water tank for the well. So we had about an 80-gallon tank that we replaced. It was a 20-gallon tank. We put in an 80-gallon storage tank for the water. So that created a lot of issues. We had to widen a wall to fit that in. So it was, you know, one thing after another to get it there. But so we battled through that, did a lot of that work ourselves. So it took a little bit longer to get it ready to get on the market than we initially planned. But we did a lot of the interior design stuff ourselves. My wife's really handy with that kind of stuff, so I let her pick and choose all the niceties inside. So we did reach out to Mike and got some of the design stuff on the artwork. We've got a little bit more to do on that after this year. We're trying to recoup some of the profits to put some more into, you know, designing the experience like we really want it to be. But definitely the artwork that we did get, we filled one living room, the whole back wall, with a scene from one of the waterfalls in the area. So it's just that worked out really well. People like that. I can tell you we did follow through all the coursework that was laid out for designing the experience, creating a theme. We've kind of gone with the name of the cabin is the Night Owl Nest. So we've kind of themed it around owls inside. And everybody responds really well to that. Yeah. We one of the things we've added in is my wife got these little tiny owls, and we scatter seven of them around the cabin inside, and kids get to do a scavenger hunt for them, and then they can rehide them for somebody else to find. It's just been really fun. So
I love that. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. I actually, when I looked at you guys listening and you mentioned and you were seeing that you guys were doing that, I think that's a really fun thing to do for sure. And so it's just those kind of you got the theme, and then you kind of take it to another level. When they get there, it kind of becomes a little bit experiential, which is a lot of fun.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, awesome. I am super curious about your sulfur smelling water. I actually have a cabin up by Yellowstone National Park. I don't anymore. We sold it, but we had a well and it smelled like sulfur all the time. And I'm like, you'd shower and you'd smell it. It wouldn't stay on you, but when you're showering, you're smelling the sulfur. If you're running the water, you're smelling the sulfur. So
yep.
We never solved our problem, but it sounds like you guys figured out a way. So you would filter it into the tank. So then, and then you pull from the tank afterwards, right? Like, so yep. that tank would stay full.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a, I have to look up the brand of it. It was basically essentially called an iron eater. It looks like it was about a 4-foot tall filter, and it's only about eight inches round, just a cylinder. Right. So water comes in, runs straight through that filter, and then goes, gets stored in the tank. And it seems to work, solve the problem so far. Nobody's complained about it since we put that in. So
that's so funny. When we had ours, I'd have the water tested, and they're like, no, this is like super clean water. This is like really good water.
Yeah.
You just smell the sulfur because it's in the ground, right? And
yep.
And up by Yellowstone, there's all those, I mean, there's all the hot pots and all that stuff going on. And so you're just getting some of that from the minerals in the ground. They're like, it's super healthy. It's like really clean. Yeah. Like, but it would, you'd smell it. And my wife,
but you smell
like,
it. That's right.
I can't stand this. Showering up here because it's this sulfur is like all over me. But then you get out and she's like, smell my skin. Do you like smell it on my skin? I'm like, nope, I don't smell it. I can smell it in the shower. But so it's now I know it could have been fixed. I wasn't smart enough to get it fixed.
I'll look up the link and send it to you. So
that's awesome. I love that. The things I learned. See, I learn stuff new on every podcast as well. So.
That's right.
Awesome. So we got it launched. So June, we got through the design and setup phase. You guys are self-managing. So you decide to, you're going to be self-managing it, and you launch it on the end of November, which is, you got the holidays, but you're also not, that's more of a summertime market, right? I mean,
Rocky Hills is
definitely a summertime market. So we're launching not necessarily in the peak season, but how was the launch, and walk me through that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we literally launched it basically the last week of November. So we got Thanksgiving. I was expecting to have to pawn this off on a lot of my friends and family to like, hey, you got to come stay at this place. Yeah. but we had one person that we were friends with that rented it, and then nobody else got a chance. It booked like
that's always awesome.
Mind blowing. I think within the first 2 weeks we had like 17 bookings. So it was just completely unbelievable. We obviously followed the path that you've laid out, and we started off with reduced price for our bookings just to generate the positive reviews, generate the traction. Man, I'll tell you, it definitely worked. We increased the traffic flow, started getting some of those reviews in, and we've been continuing to increase our rates to see if we can make it stop. So
you keep pushing them. That's the goal, right? So you're in that stage right now, kind of raising those rates and seeing if we can slow things down a little bit, kind of really maximize right now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was definitely a wild start. I was not looking to get that many bookings, especially through the winter months. And it wasn't just that people were booking, they were booking to actually stay. Every weekend was booked through December. Somebody stayed for 5 days through Christmas, and it's, that market, Hocking Hills market, is primarily a 2 to 3 day stay market. Yeah. And we've had several people stay for longer than that. So it's been super positive feedback. So
awesome. That's awesome. So you, how is it going looking into the summertime? Is it one of those markets that books out far in advance? Most markets lead times have shrunk significantly. Are you booking quite far out in advance, or most of them coming in within that 30 day period that we're seeing in a lot of markets right now?
Yeah. As of right now, it seems like we're on a 60 to 90 day booking time frame. We've got basically April, May, and June are pretty well booked. Those are pretty well booked solid. We've got, I think, two rentals that are booked for July, two for August, and kind of through the fall, it's kind of looking like that. It's, as of right now, we're 2 months out for sure, completely booked. So
that's awesome. Congrats. Yeah, that's awesome.
I appreciate it. So
keep that, keep pushing those rates, right? Keep incrementally increasing it until the market tells you otherwise. It's funny. We always do all the projections and all the underwriting, everything else, to give us a baseline of where we should be and where we're starting, and kind of deciding whether these are investable assets or not. But then you get into the game, and it's really saying, hey, let's let the market dictate where we're at, right? And so sometimes we are able to push those prices well beyond what we actually underwrote. So that's that can always be an exciting place to be in. So I'm hoping you guys kind of get there, right?
Yep, that's what we're hoping. So
Awesome. So first time self-managing short-term rental. This is your guys' first short-term rental. So walk me through, you know, it's one of those things that we talk a lot about. I think it's one of the most important decisions short-term rental owners make. And, you know, I always say management is the Achilles heel of short-term rentals. But, you know, and we always, like, I don't manage any of my own properties, but it's really, really hard for me to find the right property manager. I spend a lot of time doing it when I enter a new market. And I would say that the majority of our Vodacy family does not manage their own properties, but the majority of our 1% club manages their properties. So we have, it's kind of a flip-flop. So the people who choose to self-manage and do a really good job with it actually perform a lot better. So, but it comes with pros and cons. So walk me through kind of your expectation of self-management and how it's feeling so far.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest reason why we decided to self-manage getting started is we wanted to know kind of the ins and outs of everything with short-term rental. We wanted to know what's going to make this work, to our best advantage. So we wanted to be involved in basically every aspect of it to know, this is what's working well. This is, how we're responding to individuals that are booking, to problems that are happening, just so we know what to expect. And eventually our goal is to not self-manage. I don't need more work than what I've already got. Yeah. But this first year we're doing that to get a better understanding of what is to be expected of a property manager. So we know, more of what to look for when we do reach out for that. So that was kind of the mindset behind why we did it. And cost plays into effect in that too. We were wanting to try to recoup as much of our investment as we could, off the bat. So eventually, the goal will be to transition out of that and have somebody else manage. But, I think it's definitely been a big help seeing the best ways to respond to individuals, what's helping us get reviews, and 5-star reviews at that. So, it's definitely been very informative to do the management ourselves. But like you said, it does create, there's a lot more work with that. You get some of the late evening messages, like, why is this not working? And why, we've had some issues with the hot tub. And, I reached out to Brian Imch is another guy in the same market. I was like, Brian, who do you use for hot tub maintenance? I got to know. You do get those fire drills sometimes, but, having the past with, mobile home park management has definitely allowed me to understand. You just shake it off and move on. It's all right. Yeah. So there are going to be problems come up. You just got to learn to just roll with the punches and you can't take it personal. You just got to fix the problem and move on.
Yeah. Fix it and move on. And I love that you mentioned kind of setting the expectations or understanding what those expectations are of performance and how things are working before you hire somebody. Sometimes that's really overlooked. And like we have kind of our view of this short-term rental world and how we operate and how we deliver these experiences many times is not what is the norm, I guess you would say, in the industry. And a lot of property managers and companies are operating at the norm, right? They're operating with average properties, average delivery, average communication. And we kind of view the world a little bit differently. So you're following this process. And many times it's really nice to be able to see what works and what doesn't work, just even on reviews, like our review process. Not all property managers want to do that. And you can see the results. And many times when you already have the results and you've already set the expectation, a property manager can walk in and say, I got to do at or better than what they're already doing, instead of plugging into a system which is already mediocre. And then they're saying, well, you're doing just as good as everybody else, right? And that's not what we want. We want our unfair share of business. And sometimes setting those expectations and experiencing what it takes to set those, that baseline and what it takes to get the reviews and what it takes to, push those prices and all those different things. It's nice to know individually before we go hire somebody, because when somebody says, well, that's not how we do it, or that doesn't work, you can say, oh no, it actually does work because I was doing it. Right. And right. That can be a really valuable conversation in the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. So we got back into self-management. We're rolling into a good summertime season. What's next on the agenda? Like, is this one, we're going to maximize this one? Is it, do we have, you mentioned the beach property. What does the future look like?
Yeah, I think we definitely want to maximize this area. I think we'd like to do maybe two more in this market before we move on to another market. Yeah. That way we could get set up with, you know, like I said, with a property manager that has a kind of a smaller portfolio to manage and make it a little more worthwhile for them. So yeah, I think we want to continue that trend in this area, before moving on somewhere else. But, we're actively trying to look for the next one right now. And, hopefully we'll try to get one in before this year's up. So, nice. That's the plan for this year. So we've got, like I said, we've got a few other things we want to do to this one currently, to continue to maximize the experience, a few more design things we need to add. But we'll get it there this year. So
love it. Are these tax plays? I didn't ask you, are you guys using them as, to reduce the taxes and kind of let Uncle Sam help, fund this portfolio?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm waiting. I've got an email into CostEG study right now. They're finalizing my study, and hopefully I'll have that back. I think I'm going to have to file an extension for taxes this year. But
oh yeah, we're right up on it right
now. Right? I'm pretty much out of time for that.
So. Yeah,
but yeah, we got hooked up with them at the end of last year, and they did the on site stuff, and so yeah, I should have that back anytime, and definitely taking advantage of that. So.
See a nice little depreciation write off right on the, on the old tax form. That'd be awesome.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So plan to roll that money right into another one. So
exactly. Yeah, right. That's what you'll use to, you know, that, and that's what's so fun is you start to fund and, you know, like you said, roll it right back into another one. And just keep that ball rolling, you know, it's a pretty powerful way to really accelerate your portfolio building journey. You know, it doesn't work well. I always tell people, if you're planning on not holding these properties for the long term, if you're going to resell them really quickly, it's not always the best play. But man, if you're buying long-term assets that you're planning on holding for a little while, it's a massive advantage to be able to take that CostEG and that big write-off and recoup some of the money that you're just paying in taxes anyway. You might as well keep it in your pocket and go buy another property with it, right?
Absolutely.
Heck yeah. Awesome. Well, listen, Matt, this has been a really fun conversation. As we wrap it up, I always ask at the very end, you know, we go through these processes, the things we learn along the way, like, is there something that comes to mind, information you wish you would have had, advice you would have given your younger self, advice you'd give somebody else that's thinking about walking in this game that's you're a few steps ahead of now, anything that comes to mind of things that you wish you would have known?
Yeah, I mean, I just think about just modesty in general. I relate that a lot to discipleship. Like I said, I'm pretty active with our church family, and I think about discipleship, and you look at what that means, and it's following someone that's more mature than you, and being intentional with a reproducible process. And that is exactly what you've created with Vodacy. You've got folks that have done this for a while, folks that know where you need to go and where you need to be. You've created this process of here's the steps you need to go through, and we're going to walk alongside you to do that. So I greatly appreciate what you guys have done with this system, and relate that, you know, highly to the same aspects of faith, in my opinion. And as far as advice to my younger self, I would say, don't be so concerned with what other people think about you. If you're more concerned with what other people think, you're going to never take the steps forward that you need to become a better you. So that would be my advice to my younger self.
Love it. I love it. I appreciate that. I appreciate the kind words about Vodacy. And that's what it is about, right? You don't need to reinvent the wheel really in anything that we're doing in life. And, you know, to your point of, you know, this is coming out on Good Friday. And so we've got a big weekend for Christians, yep. Right?
It's absolutely.
We got happy Easter to you and everybody listening as well. But it is, you know, it is one of those things that like you said too, is don't worry what everybody's telling you. Everybody, what we assume is, you know, kosher and acceptable and everything else is what the average, right? What the masses are doing. And you're just never going to escape the rat race. You're never going to reach your best self by doing what everybody else is doing. And so sometimes you just have to say, hey, listen, I'm running down this road. I'm going to find somebody to follow. I'm going to learn. I'm going to, you know, it doesn't mean I'm not going to make mistakes. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to fall down. But when I've got somebody else that's been down that road before, many times they can pick us up and, you know, put their arm around us and walk through some of those hard times. It doesn't mean they can completely avoid them. They want us to avoid as many as possible, but you don't need to reinvent the wheel. And you also, while you're running down the road, anytime you're trying to, you know, we always hang out with people that are fairly like us, right? And so, you know, there's always like we always all live in our own bubbles and we're fed our own biases. And when we want to remove ourselves from that bubble, people in that bubble are going to say, you know, they're going to have opinions and they're going to maybe say, hey, listen, I think it's better over here. Maybe you should just stay here with us, right? And I love that piece of advice of saying, hey, listen, you know, you be you. And if you want better, you know, sometimes you're going to hear some of the chatter from the back, you know, the back seat, and you got to ignore it a little bit once in a while. So great piece of advice, Matt. This has been a really fun conversation. Again, this is coming out on Good Friday. Those of you that are celebrating an amazing Easter weekend, have a safe and happy Easter weekend. Matt, you guys do the same with your family. I know you're going to be busy. Your dad's a preacher and you guys are, I'm sure got plenty of plans for the Easter weekend, right?
That's right. Yep.
Awesome.
I appreciate it.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, I appreciate you joining us. Those of you who are listening, thank you for joining us. We know your time is valuable, and it means a lot that you spend it with us. Our goal is to help you walk into this game with your eyes wide open. I always feel like some of the best ways is just listening in on conversations with people that are a few steps ahead of you, willing to share the good, bad, the ugly, just like Matt has been today. I know that you guys like these shows. I always ask you two favors at the end of every episode, but the one is, I don't run ads. I don't run sponsorships. You don't have to listen to a whole bunch of ads and things going on while you're listening to these conversations. The only way the show grows is if you guys share it. And it's very, very helpful if you subscribe on whatever platform you're watching or listening on, because then if you do, the algorithm is very smart and it will share it with other people just like you. So even if you don't have anybody to share it with, just subscribe and that algorithm will share it. So those things are very important to us and we appreciate it. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
For joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.